Hello, it's Thursday, January 12th, 2006. You're tuning in to Wing Radio, which can be found at www.wingtv.net. Now, on our show today, we have Mr. Ralph Epperson, and he's one of the most influential writers on the New World Order that there's ever been. He's the author of such books as The Unseen Hand, The New World Order, Masonry, The Conspiracy Against Christianity, and many, many others, not only books plus videos. And we're just very, very pleased to have him on. We're going to talk about his latest book today about Jesse James, but we're going to bring Ralph back again next Friday, a week from tomorrow, and talk solely about that book. So right now, I'd like to welcome Mr. Ralph Epperson to Wing TV. How you doing, Ralph?
Victor, thanks so very much for the time. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for coming on, and we very much look forward to this new book you have. Now, before we jump into things, why don't you tell everyone how they can find your website and how they can find the many, many books and videos that you've done over the years?
If people are curious and want to do some browsing and perhaps maybe purchasing some material, that's fine. It's Ralph, R-A-L-P-H, dash, Epperson, E-P-P-E-R, SON.com, Ralph-Epperson.com. That's the my latest catalog.
Yeah, and we urge everybody to go there because, as we said, this is one of the best fountains of knowledge on the New World Order and what's been going on historically that there's ever been, really. And, Ralph, I have to admit today that I'm not in a real good mood because I've been seeing the drumbeats for war banging louder and louder every day, and we're already in this disastrous war in Iraq, and it seems like every day things just get pushed a little bit closer to some kind of, you know, preemptive strike on Iran, or I don't know if Israel is going to go into Iran. But the thing that really bothers me is, as we come closer and closer to war, I see people on the streets, everyday people, and they seem impervious to it, as if we're going to go into another war and it's just passing right by them. So tell everybody, to start off the show today, and I know you lived through World War II and you lived through Vietnam, tell everybody what war is like and what we're going to be getting ourselves into if we go into Iran.
Well, in all those wars that you just mentioned, the Korea, Vietnam, and World War II, our government supplied both sides of the war, and that's the scary part. I don't know that they're doing that in Iran, but I know they did it in Iraq. There was a Reader's Digest article probably several years before, even before Gulf War One, and we had supplied Saddam Hussein with all the weapons he needed to start that war. It just seems like we don't have a war in this world unless our government provides the war materials for both sides.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I noticed with our current war in Iraq is it almost seems as if it's a sterile war. It's so far removed from the everyday public that we almost don't even know that there's a war going on. I mean, compare this to Vietnam, when really that war came right into our living rooms with Walter Cronkite and so forth. Describe the difference between Vietnam then and this current war now.
Yeah, you're right. The Vietnamese War was the first one probably where we got daily coverage live, in fact. But they don't seem to be doing that so much in this Iraq thing.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is. I guess the only way we're supposed to get news about that is, I guess, with the verbal reports rather than visual. And of course, there are great things happening in that country that was been ravaged by this Saddam Hussein and his murder and brutal, sadistic tyranny over the people in that nation. And we're not getting that story. Once in a while, you'll get a talk show host will interview a soldier or someone that's lived over there or been there, and they'll report that the great things about the rebuilding of the schools and the infrastructure will be reported, but not by the media. That's all by design. I guess we're supposed to hate Bush and hate that war.
Yeah. Well, see, I've been hearing a lot of reports to the contrary. I actually just got an email a couple of days ago from somebody that just came back from Iraq, and they said it's such a disaster over there. And he's, you know, this isn't coming from the mainstream media or the liberal press. This was someone that was there, and he said it's a disaster. He said the people don't want us there. He said all this money that's supposedly going to rebuilding things isn't being used to rebuild those things. So I don't know if that's actually is true or as accurate as you think it is, because I don't know if that's happening over there.
Well, once again, then we're getting conflicting reports, and that's the problem. We're not getting the truth one way or the other.
Yeah.
The few times I've heard people call in and soldiers over there, they report that the infrastructure is being rebuilt, and that the people, in fact, I've seen pictures of the American soldiers in the uniform handing out candy to the kids or going into an orphanage or into a hospital, and they seem to be well received. I don't know. That's the point. We don't know.
Yeah.
We're not getting the true story. No one's over there doing a, that I know of. I don't watch a lot of TV, but no one that I know of is doing a report saying, look at the, one of the benefits or the failures. I don't know. We're just not getting the true story.
Yeah, well, one of the things that's mind-boggling, I read a report last week, is that they said there's gas lines, huge gas lines and huge oil shortages in Iraq. Now, this is one of the, before the war, was one of the most voluminous oil producers in the world, and the people were waiting in line for sometimes hours on end to get gasoline, and it's like Eskimos saying that they don't have enough ice.
Right.
It's really mind-boggling what's going on over there.
I just don't have any comment about that. I just don't know.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that we touched upon earlier is how this war is being sanitized is, I think, that the war machine learned from the Vietnam War that they don't want any future wars coming into our living rooms because, as you can remember, back then there were all the war protests on the campuses and in the cities and so forth. And once you compound out with the draft and so forth, is that was a very turbulent time in this nation, wasn't it?
Yes. The anti-war protesters were created by the conspiracy to prolong the war. Did you hear what I just said?
To prolong the war?
Yes.
Okay.
The anti-war protesters, now I want you to remember, in fact, I'll give you my example. I lived through this one. It's not real, not an incredible story, just kind of typical. But I was living in Portland, Oregon, and one day at lunchtime, as I was working, I worked in an office in a company like on the 10th floor of a skyscraper. And so I saw that the anti-war protests were coming down the street. So I decided to go down on the street and watch. So I got down, rode the elevator down, walked in front of my building, and down comes this war protest. And there was a big van with the fellow on the top of it with the megaphone, shouting out, through the megaphone, so everybody in the parade, or you want to call it, we'll call it a parade, could hear him. And he said, 1, 2, 3, 4, we don't want your... And then he used an expletive starting with the letter F.
Oh, yeah.
Fill in the blanks.
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, we don't want your F war.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was repeating that. And I thought to myself, what a strange way to induce the average American standing on the curb to support their cause.
Yeah. Well, how
then
much...
I saw the American flag being carried, and right in front of me, they stopped and burned it. I said, that's not the way to get me to support their cause.
Right.
And then I saw the Viet Cong flag being flown very high in the crowd.
Well, how much, Ralph, do you think that the anti-war movements at that time were actually infiltrated by the government? Because I was recently reading a book, and it had a funny line to it. It says, if there's ever five people sitting around the table talking about overthrowing the government, four of them are going to be from the government, and the fifth person is going to be a fool because he doesn't realize that the other four are working for the government. So how much do you think the anti-war protests and other such anti-government movements were infiltrated actually by government operatives?
Let me finish my story.
Okay.
This parade group, they were filthy, dirty. They were wearing flags sewn to their pants, patches on their pants. Before they got down to where I was, they had actually broken glass and offices, etc. They were insulting people. So I said, why would they do that if they want me to support their cause? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, well...
Wait.
It makes sense then, because if you want the average or the everyday American citizen not to start siding with the anti-war movement, then if you're a government operative, why not act in the most disgusting way or the most antithetical way that there is?
But let me finish.
Okay.
That parade started at Portland State University up the street. Most of these people were students. Now notice this. All the time during the war that the schools were turning out anti-government students, they kept getting funded.
Mm-hmm.
By the government. Isn't that strange? Now, let me tell you this. If I were to work for this very same company that I worked for in Portland, and out in front of the building, I carried a sign every day for lunchtime, my boss boss is a pig. I hate the boss. I'm going to burst a boss down, killing, destroying. How long would I work for that company?
You would be out the door that day.
Now, so notice that didn't happen during the war.
That's right. That's right.
The government kept funding all of the schools that turned out anti-war, anti-government students. Why?
Well, I mean...
Let me finish.
Okay.
They wanted the product. They wanted anti-war protesters. Now, let's finish. Notice what we were told during the war. Your government, right or wrong. Which means love it or leave it. Which means there was only two options. Support your government. If you didn't support your government, this is the way you protested. You burned the flag. You spat on people. You insulted them by cutting the Viet Cong flag. You used foul language. You took them dirty or depraved. Why? Because we had no victory. Now let's go one step further. When Winston Churchill back in World War II used to make that neat sign with his first two fingers, it stood for victory.
Yep.
But notice during the Vietnamese War, it no longer stood for victory, it stood for peace. Why? Because victory was not an option.
Right, and there were so many ulterior motives to the Vietnam
There's
War.
Please, let me finish, Victor. I'm trying to make a point here.
Okay.
We were being conditioned by our government that there were only two options. Either you support the government when it doesn't want to win the war, or you join the anti-war protest by using foul language, dirty, break windows in stores as you walk by, shout obscenities, burn the American flag, carry the Viet Cong flag. Now, why would they do that? The only reason they did that was to continue the support of the government when they didn't offer us victory. Victory was not a third option. There was no plan for victory. Hmm. Our government didn't want to win that war, and the way they conditioned the American people to support the government was by these protests, which were covered, as you pointed out, by the media. Every time three people got together with two signs, the media was there.
Well,
there were protest marches in Washington, D.C. during the Vietnamese War by win the war, get out people, and there was no media coverage. Hundreds of thousands of people went to Washington, D.C., to say, give us victory. And, of course, the media didn't cover it.
Well, how do you compare that, Ralph, then, to what we saw a couple years ago with George Bush when he said right after 9/11, which we all know is state-sponsored terrorism, when he said, you're either with us, meaning the neocons in a war machine, or you're with the terrorists. Can you compare the two?
That's choice A or B. The choice of not being with either one is not an option. It's like victory. Victory was not an option. They didn't want to win that war, and we've got to find out why. And I know why.
Well, why is it then?
Okay, are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
You want to talk about the Vietnamese War?
I'm ready.
Okay, let's go back to 1943. In 1943, the war in Vietnam was planned by our government. At least 1943. That area, which was called Southeast Asia, or whatever it was, there was a name for it, I can't remember what it was right now, was divided after the war into Laos, Cambodia, and North and South Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
They divided Vietnam into a north and a south, and they allowed the communists to run the north, and the south was supposed to be free. Then our government hired Ho Chi Minh, a known Marxist communist, to lead the anti-war guerrilla army. And our army went there and captured, or actually acquired, Japanese goods, weapons, materials, war-making materials, that the Japanese had abandoned as they were receding, going back home after the war started to wear down. So our government armed Ho Chi Minh. Our government trained him. Our government supplied him. Generals in the United States Army went to Vietnam and broadcast on Viet Cong radio that there was a revolution coming and the United States was going to support Ho Chi Minh. That means that our government planned this war and fought it by supplying the enemy.
Oh, and that doesn't surprise me in the least. And, you know, when you start talking about the other things we were involved in as the Vietnam War was going on, and you've touched upon this in your work, is the role of the CIA and transporting drugs out of...
Let's get that. Please, if I may, take two more minutes. Let me finish.
Okay.
Let's continue this. It took a while to develop a guerrilla army, but our government was there training them and supplying them. And you start a war, you need an army. So our government, now, the second plan was, if we allowed the Vietnamese to fight the war, it would be people on ox, throw oxen or oxes, what you want to call them, or horses throwing spears at each other.
Mm-hmm.
So now neither the North or the South had technology. They didn't have radar, they didn't have jet airplanes, they didn't have missiles, they didn't have submarines, they didn't have airplanes, they didn't have Air Force bases, etc. All of that had to be supplied. So the decision was made by this conspiracy that planned the war in at least 1943 that Russia would supply the North and we would supply the South, and then we would supply Russia.
And the people...
That war was fought totally by the United States government on both sides. How do I know that? I got the documentation from the government.
And the international bankers who were lending money to both sides were the ones that ultimately won in the whole deal.
Yes, but there's a reason for that as well. Let me finish. Now, during the war, our government allowed businessmen to sell war-making technology to Russia with certain knowledge that it was being sent to Vietnam to kill Americans. Our government did that knowingly. How do I know that? The Department of Commerce used to publish a booklet called the Export Control Bulletin. I have some in my files.
Uh-huh.
And I used to read those, and they would list the product and the amount being sold, not the company, but the product and the amount being sold to Russia during the Vietnamese War. Congressmen tried to introduce legislation to stop it, and in my book I actually identify the bills that they offered to stop this aid trade with Russia when they were using the stuff to kill Americans. And those bills were defeated. Defeated.
Yeah.
They were voted down. Why? That's called murder. And they didn't do it. I'll give you one specific example. Congressman Morris Udall was my congressman here in the southern Arizona. And Mo Udall, you might remember, ran for the presidency against Jimmy Carter.
Yep.
He almost beat him. He very well easily could have beaten Carter.
Yep. I remember
Carter
him.
Was their candidate, so that didn't happen. So now, we've got Morris Udall, my congressman, used to have these public meetings where you could go and sit with him in a little trailer he'd rent or owned or something, and he'd sit in a shopping center. You could make an appointment to go see him for 10 minutes. And I used to go in there with these reports in my hand by the Department of Commerce and say, Morris Udall, why did the government allow this to happen? We were selling technology to Russia when we, and the report identifies the products that we were selling. So it's war-making technology. We were selling it to the Russians, and it was being used to kill Americans. And his answer was, it was good for business.
Yeah.
Business. We were making profit at this. Yes, and I said, you're right. The morticians loved it. We
That's
were killing
right.
our own children, and Morris Udall had no objection to that, and neither did our Congress. Why?
And you know, the saddest thing, Ralph, is that that same mindset, that same philosophy is carrying forward today when you look at companies like Halliburton and Kellogg Brown and Root and on and on and on. They're doing the same damn thing today that they did 40 years ago.
Now, let's finish. Why was the war planned? Why did our government supply both sides? And secondly, why didn't our government want to win the war? Why? Because the war was supposed to create a drug culture. A drug culture. Wait a minute, Rob, what are you talking about? The purpose, the reason our government planned a war in that area was because of drugs. Drugs were plentiful and available.
The Golden Triangle.
Probably too expensive for the Vietnamese, but were not too expensive for the American soldier. So the American soldier's over there to fight a war to victory, and he's not being given victory. So he turned to drugs. That's what they wanted. Do you know what fragging is?
Fragging is when you kill one of your own.
Yes. Fragging was throwing a grenade, a fragmenting grenade, into your officers.
Yep.
I've heard this. I had a Green Beret tell me this. I don't know if it's true, but it seems to fit. A Green Beret sergeant that was touring the country back then, during the war trying to stop this aid trade, told us one night here in Tucson, or as they're Portland at the time, he said that fragging killed more second lieutenants and first lieutenants than any other cause.
Oh, I believe that without a doubt.
Now, okay, why were they killing our own officers? Because they couldn't understand the reason for the war. Why won't you let us win the darn thing?
Yeah.
So they were killing, the only people they could kill were their officers, saying, we're protesting, we're not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
But they were drafted. They had to. Now, the reason for the war was drugs. We created a drug culture in America with the Vietnamese War. How did we do that? We created Vietnam veterans who hated the war, didn't want to be there. They were forced by a draft, and they were fighting in a war that they wouldn't let us win.
Mm-hmm.
They got frustrated, and they turned to drugs. Now, when the Vietnam veterans came back from the war, they were hailed as not heroes, but as scumbags, baby killers.
That's right.
The children killers. Remember that?
Well, I was just coming of age then, so I don't remember it specifically, but I've read enough about it, and the ones that were making all the money off of it was the CIA and their black budget operations.
Hold on, Victor. We're getting to that. Just finish. Let me go slow. If you don't mind, let me finish with this. I talked about this. I put a video out on this subject about 1983. It's 3 hours long. So I believe I know what happened. Now, the second way they did, when I was a young man, about 8 years old, in 1945, my mother was born in New York, and her parents, my grandparents, lived there. So we used to go to New York, and I remember going to one of my relatives was a superintendent of a building, a skyscraper in New York City, and we went there in 1945 and watched the soldiers come down the street in a ticker tape parade. They were hailed as heroes when they came back.
Yep.
But they didn't do that with Vietnam. Why? So that the Vietnam veteran had a drug habit. He couldn't get a job because they were all baby killers. That was by design. So he turned to crime. And the more crime he created, the more policemen we needed, the more courts we needed, the more jails we needed. You'll notice we can't keep the crummy prisons built. We're building them all the time. We're housing drug people, people involved with crime because of their drug habits.
Yeah, I mean, it's the biggest industry around today. And
let's finish the last story, if you don't mind. Let me finish the story. Because you just alluded to it. Let's tell you the truth. This is what happened. Now, the reason we did this was to create a drug culture so we could import drugs. Now, we have a war on drugs. There are two major drugs in competition with each other. One is cocaine, the other is heroin.
Mm-hmm.
We know where cocaine comes from. The Medellin cartel or Colombia or Venezuela or wherever, it's someplace in South America.
South America.
And so the war on drugs is shut back down. We've got a cartel, the Medellin cartel, and we're constantly arresting people, bringing cocaine in. But notice this. When was the last time you heard of a heroin interdiction? A capture of tons of heroin? Never. Why? Because the CIA is importing the heroin.
Well, from Afghanistan now, which Well, about 80% of the heroin comes from Afghanistan right now.
Only a small percentage of the drug heroin comes from Afghanistan.
No, about 80%.
90% of it comes from Red China.
Well, it's grown. 80% of the poppies that are going to the illegal drug trade that eventually becomes heroin is grown in Afghanistan, and coincidentally, isn't it?
Not true. That's a lie.
Well, no, Ralph, I could bring you data upon data upon data that it's all coming from Afghanistan.
I can show you maps of where it's being grown in China.
Well,
80% of the heroin into this country comes through China. It's sent down to Kunshaw, who's the drug warlord, who's the man in charge of a group called the Shan people with an army of 20 or 30,000 soldiers, well-equipped because he's the one who converts the poppies into heroin.
Well, that was in the 70s and 80s, Ralph, not today.
At least hear me out. Those drugs are then taken on board Air America airplanes and brought into the United States by the CIA. That's why there is no interdiction of the drugs in this country.
Yeah, Ralph, that was in the 60s and 70s. Right now, the heroin's all coming from Afghanistan. That's where it's being grown. Well, I'll disagree with you.
I admit that the government admits that some of that heroin's coming from Afghanistan, and we're trying to stop that. But I'm telling you, the 80% still coming into this country is coming from Red China. And the reason, now let me finish, there's one more part of the story. The reason that it's being done is because American businessmen are selling war-making technology to Red China. And they don't want the yen, it's worthless. They don't want pigs, knuckles, or rice, they want dollars. China into a war machine. Now, understand this. There is no one but the Red Chinese government selling the drugs. There's no independent warlords or drug lords. It's the government that does it. It has government troops mending or tending the poppy fields.
Well, Ralph, well, we're going to...
From the government showing where it's being grown.
You're going to have to look into Afghanistan and what's going on there, because that has replaced the Golden Triangle now as the focal point for poppy production and for the heroin market. I'm absolutely certain of that. So we're going to have to disagree on that point.
Yeah, that's true. It's being flown in with Air America airplanes. I live in Tucson, Arizona, where they they're reconditioners. They take airplanes in and remake them. And redo them. Like Playboy wants a jet airplane, so they take seats out and put in the bars and seats and TV sets.
I mean, Ralph, Air America doesn't even exist anymore. That's been long gone. I mean, the CIA, of course, has a different type of operation, but it's not called Air America anymore.
I've got pictures of their airplanes in Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah, well, I'm sure the CIA is bringing this stuff out some other way, but there is no Air America anymore.
Okay, well, they must have another airline. But I'm telling you this, even if you're right, and I don't think you are, I think it's still Red China, because they haven't supplied enough materials to make them into a war plane. That's a huge nation. But even if it is, it's coming in through our own government. That's why there is no war on drugs, on heroin. It's only on cocaine.
Well, the reason Red China's being built up is because that's where we moved all our damn factories, everything at Walmart.
But there's something going on here. Understand this.
Yeah, our country's being sold down the river.
And the murder of 58,000 Americans to get money into the drug business. Why?
Well, that was all CIA black budget operations. I mean, that's how they funded their clandestine operations in every other part of the world.
But there was no drug culture until the government planned the Vietnamese War. That's
well, the beginning of the drug culture was...
Arizona, which is just north of Mexico.
Yeah. Well, the beginning of the illegal drug culture, Ralph, started with the beatniks in the late 40s and going into the 50s, but it was very small compared to what happened after the Vietnam War.
Well, I agree with that. I'm not saying Vietnam's the only source. Of course, the drug culture was created by music as well. That's why the Beatles wrote all those songs. The Beatles and those rock and roll acid heads were convincing the young people to take drugs. I don't argue that. And I've never argued the fact that Vietnam is the major source of the drug culture.
Well, that went way before the Beatles. It was the black jazz musicians and so forth that were the ones that really brought the drug culture from the underground into the white subculture via the beatniks. And then after that, then it was people like Timothy Leary and Ken Kesey and so forth.
Yeah, well, those people, I'm sure they don't compare to what the Vietnamese War did to this nation.
Well, it was all part and parcel together. But Ralph, we're running out of time here, so I want to thank you for coming on, and we're going to have you back next Friday. We're going to talk about your Jesse James book, and everyone, again, Ralph's website can be found at www.ralph-epperson.com. There's a lot of good stuff there, so take a look at it. And Ralph, we just want to thank you for coming on. We don't agree on everything, but I know one thing for certain is this war right now that's going on, if we look back at the other wars, we can see a lot of parallels, can't we?
Oh, absolutely. No question about it. Well, thank you very much, Victor.
Hey, thanks, Ralph. And we'll be back tomorrow with a gentleman named Steve Santini. He runs a website about Bill O'Reilly. This one's going to be a hoot, so tune in. Until then, keep your eyes open, because there's a lot going on.